This is Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, the radio program that challenges the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife. Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous is produced at CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus-based community station at Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded ancestral homelands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples. We broadcast a new episode on the second Wednesday of the month between 10 and 11 a.m. I am Robin Erickson, and I talk with women who are aging outside the beauty myth and into their power, honoring their experience and celebrating their strength here on Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. This is episode number 2, and my guest today is Cass King, who is the lead singer and co-writer of Cass King and the Cassettes, who play guitar-driven soul with four-part vocal harmonies. Cass has been performing spoken word, comedy, and cabaret for more than 20 years and is a member of the musical comedy duo The Wet Spots. She has been a featured performer at the Sydney Opera House and won Best Cabaret Award at the Adelaide Fringe. She is co-creator of Shine, a burlesque musical, which won Vancouver's Ovation Award for Best New Musical. And she is currently gearing up to release her new album, Naked on the Dance Floor, and also learning how to play the drums. So welcome to the show, Cass.
Hey, Robin, thank you very much.
After a little wild ride of trying to get here through the barrage of construction.
Well, my goodness, it's like a maze up here at SFU. It's at the best of times, you know, and then there's construction. I smell toast. I thought I was having a stroke. There's cafes. It was a wild ride.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we won't get the jackhammer on top of us during the program. That has been a regular feature on the radio here for a while. So we'll see where we get. So let's get started with our chat here. I'm excited to sort of dive into a few things that make you a feminist, 50-ish, and fabulous. But I'm curious, because those three words are a triple threat in society at large, I feel. But are those qualities that you resonate with, or are they're your own sort of triple threat qualities that you identify with?
For sure, feminist. I'm only just coming around to 50-ish, to be totally frank, and yeah, it does my head in sometimes, and it's exciting to be here to talk about it. And fabulous, yes, I do identify as fabulous. I have, yeah. But are you asking what are the qualities that I think of as a triple threat?
Both. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I am outspoken. Which is a word, I was reflecting on the word outspoken. I was like, do we use that to describe men? Or is that just a term we use for women? Mm-hmm. I know that certain men are outspoken against the sights you damn, or outspoken against something, but just as a general descriptor, do we use outspoken for men?
Generally, no.
Yeah. So, like, why? Why do we, what is outspoken? What does that mean? But anyway, whatever it means, I'm that. And I think it's a source of humor, or like one leads to the other. It's a chicken or the egg thing. I am told that I'm funny because I say funny things, but also I say funny things when I want to point out the truth of a thing.
Mm.
So that, and you know, being creative, it's been a huge part of my life ever since I was little.
Yeah.
And those are really the two, I think, outspoken and creative. And weirdly logical, which is like leads to this really interesting dynamic with folks who think that I'm this like artist. So artists aren't, you know, logical and don't have this like streak of wanting to organize and coordinate things and do math and love budgets and stuff like that. So people say that that's unusual, but I just think people have a weird idea about what art is.
Yeah, and what logical is,
yeah,
as well, right? Because I resonate with that because I'm very organized, but I'm also very creative and can, you know, think of all sorts of different ways to do things and love to make, but that still kind of comes about in a logical way sometimes.
Yeah.
So yeah. Triple threat: outspoken, logical, and
creative.
Nice. That sort of leads into my line of questioning. I'm curious about daring, because I think that, you know, with the narrative that exists for women who are aging in the society at large that we live in, we're not always seen as we are, and you know, we kind of get pigeonholed into a box that you know, we're kind of done and washed up a little bit, but that's not the case at all. And I think that relates to daring. And so I'm curious as to how you consider yourself daring, or if you do.
Well, I think it's interesting that you use the verb see, to see. We're not seen. And I think that's what it is. I think that because of the, you know, prevailing beauty standards, that women of our age are frequently not even seen at all. And I think it's something that we actually have to get used to, which is a very strange transition point in a woman's life, is getting used to being not seen or less seen. So I love the first things that come to mind are those sort of fashion mavens that are up in their, you know, 60s and 70s that are just absolutely rocking it. And we have people here like Burshu of Burshu's Angels, who is like just insists on being seen, and she's you know, got amazing style, and she takes no crap from anybody. Are we allowed to swear on here?
No swearing.
Okay, well, crud then. And she's there are women that just insist on being seen, and I think I'm one of those. A lot of it is in what I choose to wear, which is a very surface thing, but it is there are you know, societal pressure not to wear, you know, like tight clothes over a certain age, or it means something if you do. You know, it means something about your character if you do, and about it sort of has this like, oh well, she must want attention, she's so desperate for attention that she dresses that way. Well, it's like, I've been dressing this way, you know, since my mother wouldn't let me out of the house wearing it. You know, so like, it's not about what I want, you know, it's not about that I need to be seen any certain way, it's just how I dress. But I think the stories about us change as we age, so it's almost like the context changes around us.
Yes. Yeah, I think that that is very, very true. One of the things that I was just thinking about, the dress, you know, and sort of daring to wear what we want to wear rather than sort of kowtow to, you know, the stretchy pants or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that is part of being outspoken. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not just about the words that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And
it is. It's how we carry ourselves in the world.
You know, it's all of those things that represent a certain level of confidence, mm-hmm. right? To say, mm-hmm. like, I'm bucking the tradition here and I'm just going to be who I am, and if it's flamboyant, it's flamboyant.
Well, and also I think that there are, like, the constraints that I'm talking about, and I realize this is a very surface thing about costume and dress and how we look, but it actually is really deep. It when we get to this certain age, you start seeing ads on your Facebook feed for, like, blouses that hide your arms. So, like, women of a certain age shouldn't show their arms, or a certain weight shouldn't show their upper arms, because why? Because obviously, well, we're just told we don't want to. You don't want to have flabby arms. You don't want to show off those aging biceps, you know? It's like, well, why not? Why don't I? But it's this insidious message that keeps hitting us over and over again. And I just, you know, it's not a message that gets sent to male gendered people.
No.
Like, nobody is saying, like, hey, you gotta wear long pants now. I can see your varicose veins, dude. You know? Nobody's doing that. Because it's okay for a man to age the way that a man ages.
Yes. I just want to mention that both Cass and I are sitting in short sleeve shirts with our biceps hanging out.
With our flabby arms hanging out all over the place, just flapping around in here.
Oh, my goodness. Are there things that push you outside of your comfort zones?
To be honest, I'm polyamorous, which means that I'm ethically non-monogamous, and I have right now two beloved partners, and one of them is 27, and she challenges me, you know, to see things that are outside of the way that I'm used to seeing them. So she has a millennial perspective on things like language, you know, the language we use, and that some things that I think are okay that, you know, that require challenging. You know, a lot of it is that I have a what I think is an empathetic understanding that people can make mistakes and still be good people, and that is a good quality, and sometimes these mistakes that people make bear looking into or discussing with that person. You know, and my tendency is to just be like, well, people are people, they can disagree, and that's fine, just let it be. But yeah, she challenges me to have deeper discussions around, specifically around language and how I use it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's very helpful.
Totally helpful.
It seems, but I can also see how that pushes outside of our comfort zones, because, you know, a lot of that is such learned behavior.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's very deep and very unconscious in so many ways, right? And to be able to sort of catch ourselves in the way that we think and in the way that we understand the world around us because of the way that we were raised,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
there's that generation gap,
mm-hmm.
that...
Mm-hmm. Oh, and as relating to being a woman, like, they, Samantha and her peers do not put up with the kind of crap that we were told that we had to deal with, you know? And I've been outspoken since I was young, but even so, they are calling people out or calling them in a way that we didn't have, say, communal access to. We didn't necessarily feel like we had a community of women around us that were like, hey, creepy dude on the bus, knock it off, you know? And the times that I said that when I was in my early 20s, I felt totally alone, you know? And now there's starting to be this understanding that we are all together in this and that we have power in numbers. And, you know, so some of the things that I accept from mostly from sort of patriarchy that I accept as just being like, ah, well, that's the way they are, leave them alone, is not acceptable anymore. And I love it.
Yeah.
I want to keep learning this, you know? It's like I have to unlearn the you know, bad learning that I grew up with. It's fabulous.
Yeah. Gift.
Yeah.
It's a gift is the word that comes to my mind about it because, there's no reason for us to hold on to these archaic values and these archaic belief systems that really don't serve us in terms of being feminist and 50-ish and fabulous.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that happens as we get 50-ish is that we start to kind of crystallize our opinions, and like everybody, we just get kind of set in our ways. And so I think having a community, like involving yourself in a community that's under 30, is such an asset and a blessing to growth. You know, because we don't want to get caught in our ways. The world moves on.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're inconsequential to it moving on. It's going to do it with or without us.
Yes. And that's how we stay vital, right? Is to stay involved in the movements that are happening now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like yeah.
The fight for trans rights. You know, that's very much happening right now. You know, and staying involved in that movement as a feminist over 50 is super invigorating in so many ways.
Right. Yeah. I want to take a song break here and then come back and keep talking with my guest, Cass King. You've brought along a handful of songs.
Yes.
Do you want to introduce one of them? Which one do you want to hear on the radio first?
Actually, as relevant to what we were just talking about, there's a tune called Misunderstanding.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually talking about, you know, speaking to my younger self about not taking so much shit. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Poop.
Fair enough. Misunderstanding here on Intravenous Triple Threat Feminist to 50-ish and Fabulous.
Too much. Ain't no rain when you're
And I'm back with my guest. That was Cass King and the Cassettes off of an album that has dropped or is about to drop.
Yet to be released.
Okay, but it's coming close.
Yes, very close.
Is my understanding. excited about that.
It should be October. The release party should be October.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I lost my notes here.
Happens.
There we go. My name is Robin, and my guest is Cass King today for Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. And we've been talking a little bit about some qualities that fit in with being a triple threat. The first one was daring, and now I'm curious about curiosity. Mm. and where that sort of lives in your life and how that plays out. Is there something that you've always been curious about that has never left you?
I think I have an abiding interest in people and why they do what they do. I think I'm also interested in survivors and traumatic response. And it leads to what some would see as an unhealthy interest in true crime podcasts. But I just want to... I am really curious about people and what people do. And in my wonderful day job at Groundswell Community, it leads to how do we do things? How do we do things that connect people? How do we use technology and systems to create easier ways for people to connect and communicate with one another? In very specific ways. And in some ways that can be super nerdy. We're talking about just software wrangling, but in a lot of ways it's about how do people act? Because we can't create systems. Like, this is a small scale thing and also a really large scale thing. We can't create systems that don't work for people. Mm. You can't force people into your system, even if it's the best system in the world. So, In a small scale, in an operation sense, in my job, in my life, it's like, how do we create systems that work with people? How do we encourage people to work together by accepting completely the way that people are currently, the things that people like to do, the ways that people like to do them, and to be able to use our systems to support growth from the place where people are, as opposed to having this aspirational system. If we all just fill in the spreadsheet in the same way, it's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Yeah. I just hear in my mind that way of thinking, you know, where it's sort of people-centered first is a threat. You know, it's a threat to how the world works right now, because it's so not people-centered in so many ways. You know, we all have to fit into the way that this system works, and the system doesn't work for us.
100%, right from the point that we go to kindergarten.
You know? And so the work that you do in trying to figure out how the systems are going to work for the people is huge, and hopefully will sort of tr- trickle up, trickle down, trickle in between, and so that becomes more of a standard norm.
Mm. Well, as you know, Groundswell, we're trying to help entrepreneurs and people who are doing social ventures to build out, to live by their principles, mm-hmm. and to learn to live their values in a way that supports them and their own livelihood. So I'm hoping that in a very, very small and humble way, that my solo efforts as, in operations and in helping to create the operations that work, might reflect outwards with all of the people that are trying to do their own ventures and cause this sort of ripple effect. So I think that's the only change we can really affect in the world is person to person.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's how big changes happen.
Yeah, I was just reading about the full moon that is going mm-hmm. to be tomorrow at 8:29 in the morning or something like that. But it's the full green corn moon tomorrow. And in sort of woo-woo language about what the full moons represent, it's very much about how we as individuals can enact change that resonates on a broader rippled out effect where society ultimately becomes affected because we personally have made that change, you know?
Yeah.
And to be the change that we want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Ultimately. But how that causes us to revisit, you know, some of what we've done in the past in order to learn from it and, you know, all of those hard things that also come with it. I'm curious in this curiosity, how you sort of strike a balance sometimes between knowing what you know and how that keeps you feeling fresh and inspired, because sometimes it's hard to know what we know and not fall into, you know, a pit of seen that, been there, done that.
Right.
And where that inspiration keeping the challenge open, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, right now I'm learning to play the drums. And that is something that I know nothing about and have always thought that I would be good at. And then you pick up the sticks and you're like, oh, man, I suck. I'm a little bit good, and then you're like, oh no, wait, nope, still suck.
Is it the rhythm or the coordination?
It's coordination. Yeah, it's the I'm not learning to play a kit. I'm actually learning to play a sampler.
Okay,
with sticks. So it's really it's up to me how to lay it out and how I want to play it. So it's not as difficult as learning a kit, but it still is. It's quite interesting how the right hand can do something, but the left hand just doesn't get it, or trying to get them working in the same, you know, at the same time to do whatever is the thing that you wanted to do. So, I mean, the way that I think one stays curious is to stay humble, right? This is how we keep from being rigid, is to try to keep learning something that we're not good at. Because I'm tell you, in the zone of things, and my friends and coworkers will attest to this, when I think I know a thing, I'm a stubborn bull. I'm like, I know this, you guys. You know, you can ask my girlfriend, she'll tell, and my husband, they'll both tell you that when I think I know a thing, I can be super assertive about the thing that I think I know. But staying involved in practices or in in learning something that I don't know anything about, even singing is a constant learning process. you know, and I've been singing for over 20 years, you know, so you stay soft. You got to stay soft if you're going to show up to practice, you know.
Yeah, back to that vulnerability piece, right? And just be willing to dare what happens when you show up. And having that be a piece of curiosity too. I like that. I like that.
Dare to suck. I'm going to get a button made.
I'll wear it.
Okay.
I will so wear that. It's interesting because, you know, when you relate singing and, you know, even though you've done it for 20 years and sometimes it's just flat, you know, like, and I feel like that about radio sometimes because I've been making radio for a long time and sometimes it's just a disaster. It's a train wreck and I feel like I've never done it before.
Totally.
You know, but, you know, I show up and it's kind of like life is, you know, like we've been doing life every day for 50-ish years.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes we do it well.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just don't even hit the mark.
Totally. And this, I think this is where the wisdom of age is actually really useful because we know that this is not probably how the world ends. Like, we have evidence, you know, that that life will probably go on even after we botch this song so badly or this audition or this, you know, show or this exam or whatever it is. You know, we know in our hearts and in our guts that life goes on. And we don't suffer usually the anxiety that we did as younger women about, I guess, the consequences of things. You know, it's so, I remember when I was younger, the consequences feeling so much bigger and more scary, you know, and now I just know that, if I don't get to be creative anymore and I become an accountant, that somebody said to me once, if you become an accountant, you will be a happy accountant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the you know, acceptance of what is and like moving forward with the tools that I have and the things that I'm good at and the people that support me and where the love is and all of that stuff, all the privilege that I have to pursue that. It makes me certain that that things will be okay. You know, in a way that I didn't feel that grounded in my youth.
Right.
You know?
Yes. I hear you loud and clear about that. And it makes me wonder about, like, is that throwing caution to the wind? Or is that understanding that regardless of the wind, you're just going to bend and move with it and still stand?
Yeah, and sometimes that can be complacency too, right? It can be like, oh, well, if this doesn't happen, then I guess I'm going to be an accountant. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's all of those things. It doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. The point is life goes on. You know, we can throw caution to the wind and do scary big things and life goes on. And we can stay small and in our secure, you know, little box, and life still goes on. And like, that's a wonderful thing and a tragic thing all at the same time. You know what I mean? Depending on who you are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So with the drums and once you feel like you've sort of mastered the drum kit, are you going to be the drummer in the band?
Oh, no. No. We have an awesome rhythm section, so I'm not going to mess with their hustle. It's more like percussion. So on our album, there's a ton of, organ and, you know, cowbell and claps and things that we just can't do with the four of us on stage. So the first thing would be percussion. And then eventually it will be more involved, like timbale or conga, when I can wrap my head around that a little better.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. I always wanted to be the tambourine girl in a band.
Yeah?
Always. Yeah.
I was pretty scared to play tambourine when I first started, and now I love it. Yep.
It's a little complicated.
It's the loudest instrument in the band. It's the loudest instrument in the band, and they usually give it to the least talented person. Oh, my God. I can't believe I said that out loud. Sorry, tambourine players.
Well, let's hear another piece of music, and then we'll be back and talk a little bit more. What should we hear?
Let's go with Beautiful Today.
All right.
Beautiful Today.
This is Cass King and the Cassettes.
Ooh,
And that was a track called Beautiful Today by Cass King and the Cassettes. And Cass is my guest in the studio today for Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. And we have been talking about that a little bit, but about a whole bunch of things that sort of wrap around that as well. And just in the last sort of 8 or 9 minutes of the show, I want to make sure that we get a chance to talk about wisdom, because wisdom is one of those sort of buzzwords, I think, that, you know, as elderly people and you know, as we age, we're supposed to have gained this wisdom along the way. What do you feel like you hold wisdom about? It's a big question.
Yeah, it's interesting because it comes up against a fear of being self-aggrandizing. Right? That's the first thing that comes up for me. It's like, I'm not going to say on the radio what I think I'm wise about. I'm wise about not self-aggrandizing myself on the radio. Maybe. I don't know. It's a really hard thing to identify that. If anything, I guess I would bring it back to what we were talking about before, like accepting people as they are and just taking, you know, being in acceptance with the world around me as it is. And that comes straight out of working a 12-step program. Yeah. Which is totally necessary.
I want to come back to this idea of self-aggrandizing. Mm-hmm. And is that... Do you think men worry about feeling wise or espousing their wisdom to other people? Do you think that that's a struggle that we as women particularly have, that it's hard for us to not necessarily identify what we're wise about, but to really like lay it out there,
put it on the table,
and say this is the thing that I know and I can say without dispute, you know?
Right. I don't know. I think the thing that triggers the uncertainty for me is the term wisdom. Because it implies knowing about something and like really having taken it into my bones and to be sort of an authority on a thing. And I've been told that I have wisdom, but it's not a label that I think anybody feels comfortable applying to themselves. I am wise. I am the wise one. Come to me for my wisdom.
Right.
So I'm not sure if it's a gendered thing. I know that it's a gendered thing to often feel more competent at things. Like the general trope is that men feel more competent with less experience because the world has told them that they are. Mm. But wisdom is interesting to me. Wisdom is spiritual in a lot of ways, and it ties in with humility, and humility, you know, I think that the most wise people that I know that they, or that I've listened to or heard of, know that they are just students, you know, perpetual students, like Pema Chodron, you know, the awesome Buddhist teacher.
Yeah.
And you know, she's like, I don't know anything, you know, and yet she does.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's a duality.
And I think for me anyways, the older I get, I certainly appreciate how little I know in relation to how much I know. And so it does become this sort of strange basket of goodies that we hold. Because, you know, I have a broad range of experience, but within that, I can have a certain level of wisdom based on my own experience and my own self-reflection about that. But it really just lives it, like it's mine.
Yeah.
And my wisdom might not reflect your life and the wisdom that you hold because our experiences are different.
Right.
And so for me, yeah, that word wisdom is kind of a strange and wonderful term.
Maybe it's about the way that we share and even recall our lived experience. You know, I think that, as you say, we all have, you know, this experience to draw on, but our experiences are different. And if we can you be said to have wisdom if you don't communicate it with others, and or if others find no value in what you do communicate? So maybe there's a piece of it that's about how we relay our experience to others. You know, and how well valued that is.
And how humbly it's offered.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, to really sort of dictate that, you know, I know and this is what you should do because I know.
Oh man, I'm totally that person. Like frequently. But I wouldn't call it wisdom. I'd call it being a bossy pants.
Yes, I have my own bossy pants outfit sometimes. You know, I wear it well.
That's right. Mine's a onesie.
Oh, nice.
A bossy pants onesie.
With bell bottoms. That's what I admit. But that's what
feet.
I envision.
Feet. Hoodies.
There's also just very quickly an aspect of wisdom that it's attached to personal power. Do you want to have a stab at commenting on what that might look like for you in a minute?
In a minute. I think it is literally the way that we feel inside and the way that we hold ourselves. You know, if we know ourselves and we know ourselves in the world, if we can recall our own lived experience well enough to understand ourselves and our relative place in the world around us, and we can speak from the heart, then I believe that is what, you know, changes our place in the world and is seen as courage and daring and wisdom and all of that stuff. Is in, you know, acceptance and humility and the vulnerability and the ability to speak from the heart and act from the heart.
The biggest threat of all.
Yeah.
Yeah, both personally, but also externally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of power there.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! I feel our conversation could go on and on, but we have to cut it short and end it here. But I thank you so much for coming on and sharing your perspective and your ideas about these topics and being part of the triple threat.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for having me. If I could just folks that are reading or listening to come join our page on Facebook/CastKing and the cassettes all spelled out.
Yeah, and I will post that on our link to this page as well.
Wonderful.
Great. Thanks, Cass.